My name is Ian O'Neill, and this is How They Did It, a podcast where we learn filmmaking from those who've gone before us. Welcome, everyone. Welcome to How They Did It, a podcast for indie filmmakers, especially those just starting out looking to make their very first film, although anyone at any level can listen and learn. My guest this week is Mark Unger, who is an actor, comedian, and filmmaker. He wears a lot of filmmaking hats. He's the writer, producer, director, editor, and lead actor of his wonderful web series, Thespian. There's a lot to talk about, so without further ado, here's the interview. Mark Unger, welcome to the show. Thank you so much for being here with me today.
Hey, man. Thanks for having me. I really appreciate it.
Listen, I was going to say people probably recognize you more from stand-up right now than anything else, but you know what? I want you to tell people who you are. Like give them a little bio of yourself.
Well, I've been a stand-up comic since the early 90s. I started actually in Chicago. I had moved there from Baltimore. I'm originally from New York, but anyway, so we ended up in Baltimore. So I went to Chicago. I studied at Second City. And then, you know, stand-up was kind of like, there's always been this sort of like rivalry between improv performers and stand-up comedians. Yeah. And I was sort of like the purest improv comedian guy. But then one night, just for the hell of it, I decided to go to an open mic and, you know, got a couple of laughs. I actually went on, this was a gig where they had like comedians and musicians. So I signed up late. So this musical act went up and they did the song American Pie.
Yeah.
You know, Don McLean, bye, yeah. Bye. Well, here's the thing about American Pie is nothing happens after American Pie. American Pie is supposed to be the end of an evening, right? So the place is going ape shit, you know, singing along. And all of a sudden they get, thank you, folks. Good night. And then the MC walks back up on stage and goes, oh, wait, I forgot. We've got one more performer. And he brings me up. And the first thing I said on a stand-up stage was, this is like going on after The Who. And it got a little bit of a chuckle. And that was, I was off and running.
Yeah.
So I was a stand-up comic. And then I was back in New York and then out in LA for years. I've headlined, 45 states. I've worked in Canada plenty of times. I've worked in Winnipeg. I did actually a TV show in Canada, in Edmonton, a show called Club Soda or something.
Oh, I don't know that one.
Years ago.
Yeah.
Worked Toronto, worked Windsor. Actually worked next to a strip club in Windsor. might have actually been in a strip club now that I'm thinking about it. I can't remember. Anyway, so and all that time, I've also been an actor and a writer, and now I'm in Baltimore doing my thing with Thespian.
Hey, you know what? And you had a few guest spots on some TV shows. I know that you did a guest spot on Friends. It was
I did an
quickie.
Episode of Friends, and you know what's funny about that? I'm not really a fan of that show, this is an absolute true story.
Yeah.
What happened was I was living in New York and I was kind of like, the industry term is heat.
Right.
You know, he's got a lot of heat.
Right.
And at that time I had a lot of heat and my manager sent me out to LA to audition or showcase rather for this agency called APA. So the last night I was in New York before I was going to LA, I was sitting in a bar with the guys that I started with and were my friends were like Greg Giraldo. And I remember Greg was there, Tom Papa was there, Bill Burr, and we're all drinking shots.
Oh, really?
Not Bill Burr, Paul Mercurio was there.
Okay.
And we're doing shots tequila, and I swear, I said to them, there's no effing way I'm going out to L.A. so I can end up the guy on Friends. And sure enough, the first thing I booked was a role on Friends. But anyway,
how can you help it, right? Well, listen, let's go a little more recent then, because you've got a recurring role on Veep.
Yeah, that was kind of interesting. You know,
how cool is that?
I had left LA and went back to Baltimore And my intention was, when I left LA, was because my family's in Baltimore, was to stay here just a few months and then head back to New York. Because I really hated LA. I hated 5 years I lived there were just five miserable, horrible years. It's just such a soulless, terrible place. So anyway, I come to Baltimore, and then life sort of got in the way, and I met my wife here, and so I'm in Baltimore. So I get called to audition for Veep, and I book it, and I get on set, and I play a reporter who's friends with the character. I forget the character's name, but the actor is Matt Walsh.
Right.
Well, here's the wild thing. When I got on, I didn't really know anything about the show. So when I got there and I see Matt, he and I started together in stand-up.
Wow.
In fact, that story I just told you earlier about American Pie.
Yeah.
He was there that night.
Oh, man.
Yeah. And so all these years later, I run into Matt Walsh and we're doing this show Veep.
That's wild.
Yeah. And I had a chance to work with him and I worked with Julia Louis-Dreyfus. So Veep, and Veep's a great show.
Yeah.
And the director, Iannucci, is a really great guy. And it was just, I was on the first four seasons, at least once a season, sometimes twice a season. And then they shifted, they moved to back to LA.
Yeah.
So they're not going to fly me out to be the reporter. But anyway, then I started working on my things and that's where we are.
Yeah. So have you always wanted to act? Was that always in you?
Yeah. I would say acting predates comedy.
Yeah.
I've done a decent amount of theater.
Right.
I kind of, when you end up on the stand-up track, you kind of get forgotten about as a serious actor. And that's one of the reasons why I left stand-up was because I just felt sort of burnt out. It wasn't the totality of what I wanted to achieve as an artist.
Right.
And as a performer, the question of whether or not acting is art, there's a debate whether the difference between an art and a craft.
Right. Right.
I try to see acting as a craft. I think writing is an art because I think that to me, my definition of art is creating something from nothing.
Yeah.
So it's a canvas, it's a piece of paper.
Right.
That's art to me. We're acting. You're certainly adding to the character.
Right.
You're bringing the character off the page, but you didn't create the character.
Right. Right. So I see what you mean.
That's my definition.
Pretty good definition.
Probably
actually.
Kind of pretentious shit, but that's my definition. So anyway, So I've always acting's always been a part.
But when did that transition into filmmaking?
Well, the first film I ever I didn't direct this film. I co-wrote it and co-started it. I did a film in the mid-90s, Black and White, the short film, Comics Relief. And then I did a couple of other short films. And then really for me what happened is I wrote a screenplay called Go With the Dog. I've optioned two screenplays. The first one was called Adam's Rock and the second one was called Go With the Dog. Adam's Rock got optioned. And then there was interest in Go With the Dog. In fact, with Go With the Dog, the actor at one point, John Hawkes.
Yeah.
Do you know John? John was in, he's in everything. And he was nominated for the Academy Award. You might know him from Deadwood.
Oh.
If you watch that show. Yeah. He played Timothy Oliphant's Jewish friend.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And he was in the movie A Perfect Storm. He's been in a lot of things.
Oh, he's been in a lot of stuff.
Yeah. So he had attached himself to Go With the Dog. Also, the actor Paul Dooley. Paul is a character actor. You would know. He's older now, but he's in all of Christopher Guest's movies. He was in a lot of Robert Altman's films.
Okay.
Certainly, he was attached. Peter Falk was interested. He was still alive at the time.
Yeah.
So I decided. I left LA. I was in Baltimore. I decided to make a short film using characters from the feature.
Yeah.
To try to create buzz to get it made.
Sure.
So the short film was called The Filchaks Take a Gamble. And it went to a couple of film festivals. And that was my first taste of really directing film.
Yeah.
Technically video, I guess. This was shot on, at the time, This was like mid-2000, like 2005, 2006. So the big camera at the time, like sort of the prosumer camera, was the Canon 2000 or 1000. But everybody wanted to use that camera, so that was kind of cool. But what's funny is I look at it now, it's not even close to the quality I can get from my phone.
I know. It's crazy, you know? Isn't it? It's crazy.
And I remember we got a review from Film Threat. They really liked it, but they started out by saying, this looks worse than footage at a kid's birthday party. They really trashed it.
Oh, man.
But they liked the story. Sure. And that's the thing. Like, I think I came into filmmaking as a writer, really. I've always felt, and I'm a huge fan of like Cassavetes. So I'm not as interested in having to make the picture beautiful.
Right.
I want to tell a great story.
Yeah.
And I want great actors and I want great characters.
Right.
But I've learned over the years that there are ways to get both.
Right.
You know? And when we talk about thespian, I can give you kind of some examples of where certain compromises, you know, when you're a filmmaker in the DIY world,
yeah,
you're always making compromises.
Oh, you have to. Yeah.
You know, I can't lock down a street. So if there's traffic noise, you got to deal with it.
That's right.
Somebody's walking in the background.
Yeah.
You know, there's a scene in Thespian. And it's actually in the first episode where my character he's celebrating his 50th birthday.
Yeah.
And he's walking along the street with his wife and this other couple.
Yeah.
If you notice, we're wearing heavy winter coats.
Yep.
The reason is when we shot the porch scene, which is part of this sequence, we're on the porch, it was cold, cold weather.
Right.
But then when we went to shoot the street scene, I forget what happened the night we were supposed to shoot it. Oh, we had camera problems or sound problems or something. So by the time we went to revisit it, it was like in May and it was like 80 degrees out. And there's one shot where if you look far in the background, you can see this guy wearing shorts while we're bundled up. You know,
I never noticed.
It happened so quickly.
Yeah.
If it had been glaringly obvious, I would have cut it.
Sure. But
it's so quick that you don't really notice
it.
Yeah. But even the name of our production company, which is Hold for Scooter Films.
Yeah.
The reason it's called Hold for Scooter is because the day we were shooting or the night we were shooting that scene, this freaking guy on a scooter kept circling us. So I would call action. We'd hear, Hold for Scooter. So that's the name of the production company.
That's awesome, man. Listen, you this wasn't your first, like, we're going to talk about Thespian in a minute, but that wasn't your first TV show. That wasn't the first time you delved into TV. I think you did The Brothers Nobody.
Yeah, The Brothers Nobody. So what happened is I had this idea, you know, my brother and I co-own a comedy club in Baltimore.
Yeah.
Called Magoobie's Joke House.
Okay.
And I thought the dynamic with my brother as you know, the business guy and a club owner and me as a comic, I thought that was sort of an interesting dynamic.
Yeah.
And one that I wanted to explore. So we shot three episodes.
Yeah.
And it came out good. You know, I like to think that I'm first and foremost a writer.
Right.
So, and I like to think that I shouldn't say anything I write is going to be good, but I know that it can be.
Right.
And the filming with Brothers Nobody, we had some problems with crew.
Oh.
I don't want to start name calling and stuff.
Sure.
We had some issues. And then ultimately when I looked at it, I realized the world doesn't need another comedy club story. And it doesn't need another story about a comedian. And in a way, The Brothers Nobody was sort of the genesis for Thespian.
Right.
Because when I thought about what the story was that I really wanted to tell, it wasn't about the comedy club and that dynamic, although there is some of that in Thespian.
Yeah.
It's really about my character and, you know, in Thespian, we say that I live across the street from the apartment that I left 25 years earlier.
Right.
Well, the truth of the matter is I live around the corner, but it was just more interesting to say it's across the street, but I do live around the corner. And when I examine that sometimes, when I think about my artistic journey, that can be really fucking depressing, you know? but it doesn't have to be.
No.
And that's what I did with Thespian. I decided, you know, to use that as the launching point for a story about middle age, about finding purpose in life. You know, this is not a guy with a midlife crisis where, you know, he needs to go buy a Porsche and leave his wife for some 20-year-old, you know.
Yeah.
His marriage is very, very strong.
Right.
And one of the things that we like about the show is his issues have to do with career, not with, you know, family purpose, you know.
Right.
So right. I think that's kind of interesting. So, yeah.
You know what? And you've taken on a lot with Thespian because you've written it, obviously. You're a producer, director, acting. You've edited it. And even did sound editing on one of the episodes. So you're taking on a lot of hats, man.
I also color graded.
Oh, and you color graded. Well, I should add that to the list. Holy crap. Okay,
first of all, the directing, the writing, you know, the actor, the lead role, yeah, that's me. Editing is mostly me, but my wife also is involved in that process. My wife's really my partner on this in every way.
Yeah.
And the sound editing, I tried editing, and I can do it. And if I have an IMDb credit for it, I probably shouldn't, because ultimately I passed it off to somebody who's better at it than I am.
Yeah.
That's post-production sound, getting that right, is a lot trickier than picture editing.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, not that picture editing is easy.
No.
To do it right, it's not. But it's not like sound.
Sound is so important. It's as important, or if more important, than the quality of the visual.
Well, I think pretty much everyone would say that it's more important.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, an audience will forgive a less than perfect picture.
Yeah.
But if they can't hear it, or if it's garbled, they just tune out.
Absolutely. Dumb. Absolutely. Yeah. I've experienced this on my first short film, and oh man, it was a disaster. A disaster. So I learned very quickly about that. But why so many roles? Why take on the writing and the producing and the directing and the, you know what I mean? There's just so much that you're doing.
Well, I mean, it was always my intention to write and direct.
Yeah.
And to create a vehicle to showcase what I can do as an actor.
Sure.
And as a writer and as a director.
Right.
The editing, you know, I've always been somebody that was good at sitting next to the editor.
Okay.
I mean, I think I have a good eye for where to make the cut.
Yeah.
And, you know, how to make sure the story is flowing properly, and the L cuts. And so I knew it intuitively.
Yeah.
And really, I was having problems getting this one guy who was supposed to be, this was actually on Brothers Nobody.
Yeah.
He was supposed to be getting an edit done, and he kept coming up with excuses. So I finally just said, screw it. I went on YouTube. I started watching videos, and I realized if I understand it intuitively and I could sit next to an editor, the button pushing really isn't that complicated.
Right.
So it was just sort of the next step.
Yeah.
And then the same with color grading, you know?
Wow.
I mean, I would love to give it to a professional color gradist.
Sure.
See what they turn around and if it's actually better. You know, maybe it would be. I don't know.
Yeah.
But also, at this budget, anything you can do to save money, you should. And
Absolutely.
Also, you know, I don't – why give somebody else that control? You know, because you've done all this work as a filmmaker, as a director, maybe as a writer, and then you're handing it off to somebody who doesn't have the same level of commitment.
Yeah.
And – it's not a question of being a control freak. It's more a question of, or an issue of, wanting to make sure it's done right and done at my convenience, not yours.
Right.
You know?
Right. I hear what you're saying. And you mentioned budget. You have to consider the budget when you're crewing and casting and doing all that. So, and speaking of budget, can you share the budget and how you raised the money for the show?
Well, with Thespian, here's what we did. With Thespian, my wife and I paid out of pocket for the first two episodes.
Yeah.
And my brother with Magoobies helped a little bit too. And we shot the first two episodes, which are the episodes that you watched.
Yep.
And then we used that as part of an Indiegogo campaign.
Ah.
And basically, people had a chance to watch the first two episodes and said, yes, I would like to see more.
Yeah.
So ultimately we raised about $10,000 through Indiegogo.
Oh, nicely done.
It's a lot of work. And
oh,
you have
yeah.
to be relentless. And what I found really interesting about that experience is I was reaching back to people I knew in second grade.
Wow.
And they were coming up with $50.
Yeah.
One guy came with $250,
Wow.
And that makes you feel so good.
Yeah.
People believe in you,
Yeah.
But you really have to stay on it. You've got to just basically get into the mindset that, look, if you're going to go see me in a comedy club or you were going to see me in a film or, whatever else, you're going to pay for the tickets.
Yeah.
Right. So why not give me $25 and let me make something for
yeah.
you to see?
Well, and you're part of it, right? At least they feel like they're part of something.
Sure. And then season one, took us about a year to shoot, to finish the full season.
Yeah.
And then I have some industry reps who were shopping it around. Unfortunately, here's the reality. We all like to think that we're going to make something so good that the industry, it will demand the industry's attention.
Right.
And Hulu will buy it or Amazon will buy it. And right. I remember I sent it to this guy that I've known for years. This guy's a pretty big player in the industry. He's a manager.
Yeah.
He loved Thespian.
Yeah.
And he said, I don't see this as a problem. We'll turn this around for maybe about $100,000. And I've been in the business long enough that even as he's sort of showing this optimism, I'm rolling my eyes going, we'll see. I hope so.
Yeah.
And sure enough, everyone liked it. They don't need to spend money.
Right.
Or if they do spend money, they're going to spend it on big ticket talent.
Sure.
People with name recognition.
Yep.
So Amazon, the best they offered us was, hey, we have this self-distribution platform. It's not like YouTube where, there are certain parameters, certain standards that you have to meet.
Right.
So we ended up self-distributing through Amazon. So yeah, we get to say that we're on Amazon and Amazon Prime, but I would like it to be sort of an Amazon Studios
right.
production because then they're licensing it.
Yeah.
Exactly. And that hasn't happened yet. But again, rather than just wait out that process, when we were done season one, and if you go on Amazon and read the reviews, they're pretty amazing reviews.
Yep.
And they're not all relatives. they're not,
That's good.
Yeah. And so we just said, screw it. Let's do another Indiegogo campaign for season two. And this time we've raised close to $20,000. So
wow,
far.
Man. Yeah. That's fantastic. But it's a full-time job, man. It is a full-time job when you do crowdfunding.
It is. It is.
You've got to stay on top of it. So you've obviously done a good job.
Yeah, well, thankfully, between myself and my wife and, our sort of Thespian family.
Yeah.
Sort of expands as the as more actors are introduced to the project,
yeah,
and it sort of feeds on itself. And then you've got actors who they find out about Thespian, they see the show, they want to contribute, and again, $20, $25,
sure.
it all adds up. The one thing that's really interesting about Indiegogo, about crowdfunding that I've noticed is, like, I thought we would get like a lot of tens and twenties.
Yeah.
But it actually seems like people, they're almost ashamed. Like they want to give more.
Yeah.
So you don't get the twenties, you get the fifties
yeah.
and the hundreds.
Yeah.
But I always try to tell people, please don't be afraid. We love $10.
Yes.
You know, $10 is one of the pizzas that we're going
to. That's right. You got to feed. You got to feed everybody.
Right.
Trust me.
Got to feed everyone.
Oh my God. Wait, you know what? Can we just take a step back and give us a brief description of Thespian? What is it about?
It's about a guy who, on his 50th birthday, finds himself back, you know, after a long time stand-up comedy career and a once sort of promising career, he finds himself back in Baltimore, married and happy in his marriage, but living, you know, across the street from the apartment he left all those years ago to move to New York to become a serious actor. And rather than give up entirely, he decides to give up stand-up and rediscover his former self as an actor, as a serious actor. And it's about, and so the first season is about that journey of him. You know, his goal is to become a New York working actor.
Right, right.
And we follow him along that journey.
So how biographical is this?
The first episode, pretty biographical. I mean, I changed a couple of the details. In Thespian, the guy leaves Baltimore and goes to New York. In my life, I left Baltimore and went to Chicago.
Yeah.
I left Baltimore as an actor, but I already had an eye towards comedy.
Right.
In terms of improv comedy, like I said earlier.
Yeah.
And then, of course, there's the comedy club connection where Adam and Brian co-own a comedy club.
Yeah.
But really, once you get into episode two, that's just stuff I make up.
Yeah.
Basically.
Yeah. Yeah. That was some. There's some crazy stuff that happens. So I'm.
Yeah, wondering. The whole thing with Petra.
Yeah. I'm thinking that better not be biographical. Oh man,
no,
you'd
not,
be really sharing stuff if that was your life. No, that's some great stuff. Listen, it's really funny. To that end, I mean, you write this and you got this great piece. Why a web series? Why not make this a movie? Why not, you know, why not a half hour sitcom? You know, I'm just wondering why you chose web series.
It just kind of felt right. I mean, that's a really great question, and I wish I had a simple answer. I mean, well, I guess I mean I could say it never. I never saw it as a feature film.
Okay.
It's the length of a feature film. If you watch the full season,
that's
it's 2
right.
hours.
That's right.
But I just I knew I didn't want it to just because a lot of web series are really short. They're like 4 or 5 minutes, 6 minutes. I didn't want to do that. I knew the story was more long form than that. And it wasn't just, you know, a guy goes on a series of dates or, you know what I mean? It had more layers to it. So I didn't think it would work in 5 minute chunks. So, you know, I think the first cut of episode one was around 18 minutes. And then we decided, let's make a rule that the episodes can't be longer than 15.
Okay.
So we just kind of worked that was just sort of part of our Bible, I guess.
Yeah.
And we just made that happen. It just felt right. And also, I mean, a web series versus, you know, anything on Netflix, on Amazon, on Hulu, regardless of the length, it's a web series.
Yeah.
You know, or it's true. A feature film.
Right.
So I mean, even shows like which is a great show, Fleabag.
Yeah.
On Amazon, those episodes are 22 minutes, 23 minutes.
Yeah.
We're not that far off from
right.
that. And actually in season two, right now, the first two episodes are running a little longer, which I think is fine. But I guess I really just want, you know, you want that binge thing to happen.
Right.
And I think people experience that with Thespian, where they want to know where the story's going.
Yeah, where's this
and
going?
So they click and they click and they click and they click, and that's great.
And the endings of your episodes make you want to go to the next episode anyway. You do that
very
well.
Right.
Yeah,
I mean,
that's
yeah. But we didn't. We deliberately didn't go for the sort of cliffhanger.
No,
ending.
It isn't.
No, but it does make you wonder what's next.
Exactly.
I mean, you know, I teach a class in storytelling, and writing, and one of the things that that I always talk about that I'm sure as a writer. You agree is that the most sort of important thing is you need an audience to constantly asking the question, and then what happens?
Yeah, and then what happens? And then what happens?
Once they stop doing that, you're dead.
That's true. Yeah, there's got to be anticipation of something. You know, they've got to anticipate what's going to happen next. What's going to happen next? What happens next? And you're right. Lose that question, lost your audience. There's interest level that just dips. So
you know, I think a lot of people, especially newer writers and newer filmmakers, they don't know when to kill their babies.
Oh yeah,
you know, and you can see it.
Yeah,
and you get married to something. But it just doesn't belong there, man.
Yeah. Yeah.
You got to cut it.
Yeah.
And you got to be willing to cut it.
Yeah, you have to be brutal.
At this point, yeah, I mean, I'll cut anything. I will. If it doesn't serve the story, it's going.
Yeah.
No, my two rules are it's got to either serve the story or be so freaking funny that there's no way
you can lose it. Well, I like those rules. Well, a story is everything for me, right? But then flow, and there's so many things to think about when you're writing the thing.
Sure.
And then there's, because you're writing it and you're writing the lead as well, so you know what you're going to be doing there. But what about casting the show for those other characters? So that's a little different than knowing yourself and knowing what you're going to say. Now you've got to rely on other people to... You know, so how did you go about casting?
One of the things that I'm really proud of with Thespian is the strength of the cast.
Oh yeah.
And you're going to see as you go through the episodes that you know there's a lot of actors involved.
Yeah.
And pretty much with no exceptions, these are really really talented people. And when I decided to shoot this, you know, being in Baltimore, maybe this is a little not cynical, but I can't think of the word. I'm a writer who can't think of a word. condescending. You know, gee, am I really going to be able to find this level of talent in this market? Hey, we're not in New York. We're not in L.A. We're not in Chicago. And I was just blown away.
Yeah.
The woman, Sasha Carrera, who plays Petra Antonelli, she's a phenomenal actress. And her story is similar to mine in terms of, she's not a comedian, but she went out to L.A., burned out, ended up back. Actually, she lives in Frederick, Maryland, which is kind of a rural suburb, but an incredible actress. And some of the other actors, they live in this market for whatever reason. But we deliberately made it a SAG, Screen Actors Guild project. And I think that's really important. A lot of filmmakers... they get scared that if they go union, someone's going to be pressing on their neck at all times. Look, I'm a member of SAG as an actor.
Right.
But now that I'm also a producer, I do see where that frustration comes from. There is paperwork that you have to do. You do have to abide by certain rules. But depending on the contract, you can go with deferred pay if actors are willing to do that.
Yeah.
My point is that it is a workable thing to do.
Right.
And it does increase. I'm not saying that you can't find quality actors who aren't union, because you can.
Right.
But if you look at Thespian, you haven't seen enough episodes, so this won't mean anything. There are more SAG actors in Thespian than non-union actors.
Right.
And the non-union actors that we used are good.
Yeah.
Really good. And they're going to be SAG.
So, yeah.
You know? So I really recommend to your listeners that, you know, well, I mean, you're in Canada. Well, actors still applies. They're right.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
I would at least look at the contracts for like short films.
Yeah.
They have a new media contract. I do get a sense with SAG, you know, this is all happening so suddenly where anybody with a camera or a phone could create a series or create a short film or whatever. And so a lot of actors are creating their own content because why not, right?
Yeah.
So I feel like with SAG, they haven't quite figured out how to sort of get in on it and how to protect actors.
Oh, I see what you mean. Yeah.
Because as an example, with season two, if we wanted to distribute again on Amazon,
yeah,
according to the SAG, the newest version of the SAG new media contract, we would have to give the actors their pay. And that scale for this is $150 a day, I think, or $125 a day. And it says specifically in the contract that if you go on a pay-per-view platform like Amazon, that deferred no longer exists.
Right.
But here's the thing. It's Amazon didn't give us money.
That's right.
And all we get, this is they give us 6 cents an hour.
That's right.
An hour.
Yeah, until you get
to watch the whole series. Yeah. I make 12 cents.
That's right.
SAG, they think they're protecting their actors, but in a sense what they're actually doing is they're limiting their actors' ability to get exposure.
That's right.
Because they just don't have it all figured out yet.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, that's something that people need to realize when they're self-distributing as well, is that, you know, you're not getting anything up front.
No.
And they're paid by minute, or by hour, excuse me.
By hour.
And it's 6 cents an hour until you get to 100,000 hours, and then it goes to 7 cents.
Yep.
But good luck getting to 100,000 hours.
Well, now keep in mind, though, in all fairness, though, that's through Amazon Prime.
That's true.
If somebody buys an episode or buys a season, we get, it's a 50-50 split.
Yeah.
That seems fair.
That's a lot better.
Now everybody's got Prime.
Yeah.
So they're encouraged
to watch it on Prime.
And I feel like I may have gotten off topic because we were talking about casting.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. So when we wrote the first two episodes, or I wrote the first two episodes, you know, there were a couple of actors I had worked with before, actually just one that I had worked with before, Matthew Bowerman, who plays Adam's friend, my character's friend, his name is Greg.
Yeah.
I gave him the role. But everybody else auditioned. And so Nikki Estridge, or now Nikki Cotsard, who plays Abby, she auditioned. And then as the series expanded, like a good example is Sasha. I originally wrote the acting coach. Remember she does that opening monologue about Sir Alec Guinness?
Yeah.
Well, I wrote that monologue, and I knew that that was going to be the entrance into this acting class scene.
Right.
But I actually wrote that for a guy and for a specific actor who wasn't able to take on the role. Oh. So then I thought of Sasha.
Yeah.
And when I gave it to her, then my imagination kind of opened up. I said, well, what if they have a relationship from so there was a lot of improvising and a lot of
rewriting
and redirection.
Yeah.
Based on, well, a couple of things, based on the strength of the actors and also availability. Because you know, we only shot on weekends.
Oh, wow.
You know, if I booked a weekend and the camera guy was available and the sound guy, but that actor was and that actor wasn't, or last minute they weren't, you know, I would have to rewrite.
Yeah.
Because it didn't have the actors.
Yeah.
Available. And invariably it actually was always better. When I look at what I planned to shoot versus what I had to amend and ultimately shoot, the second was always the better.
Wow.
That's just a testament to, you know, put up or shut up time.
How difficult was it to direct and act in the show at the same time? So you're directing yourself.
It's not easy.
Yeah.
Thankfully I have actors I'm working with who are very directable. And I didn't have to spend a lot of time getting the performance I wanted from them. And, you know, we would rehearse and talk about it on the phone.
Sure.
I would say the hardest thing about it, it's not that acting and directing is necessarily so challenging. The problem is you kind of need to see the takes.
Right.
And we were always under time pressures.
Yeah.
And so there were sometimes I had to just trust that we got the performance from me that we wanted, and trust my wife.
Yeah.
You know, she'd be watching. And also I've been acting kind of long enough, I guess, where I know the character. I mean, Adam is not me, but he's certainly a version of me.
Yeah.
And I just know when it felt right, and I just trusted my instincts.
Fair enough. So what do you like as a director?
I think I'm definitely an actor's director.
Yeah?
Yeah, because that's where I come from.
That's true.
I think that, you know, if you watched me direct, you might think that I completely hate everything about filmmaking. Because, but it's not. It's that I love it so much,
right,
that it creates this intensity in me,
yeah,
to get it right, to serve the story, and to serve the actors. You know, these people, the crew is working for next to nothing. The actors are working literally for nothing.
Yeah.
This shit better be good.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't want to waste anybody's time. So I get on set and I try to be really prepared. You know, one thing that I've learned over the years is the more you know as a director, the more easily you can call bullshit when somebody's just too lazy to grab the right lens.
Right. Right.
You know, because that happens.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
We went through 5 DPs or 6.
Wow.
On the first season. For season 2, we have a dedicated, we sort of developed a family as we went along in season 1. But I dealt with some people that were not the easiest people to deal with.
Yeah.
But I learned a lot about, you know, let's just call it, I don't want to demean it because it's an amazing art. But let's call it the button pushing,
right?
You know, so I guess the thing, getting back to your question about acting and directing, it's not that acting and directing yourself is so difficult. I think the more difficult thing is to remind yourself to breathe, take your moment to get into character.
Yeah,
because people are coming to me with questions about lunch. They're coming to me, with oh, is she supposed to wear this shirt or that shirt? And like, guys, you got to give me a minute.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So I spend a lot of my time going, just give me 1 second, okay? Just give me 1 second. You hear that a lot on a thespian set. But I make myself available to everybody. And I always say to the actors, you know, either they've gotten to the point where they trust me. And if I say we've got it, we've got it.
Right.
Or I will say to them, hey, let's do one more take. No direction, do whatever the fuck you want, have some fun.
Yeah.
Sometimes that's the take we end up using, and sometimes it's not.
Boy, as an actor, that would be fun to hear as an actor.
Yeah.
You know, you get a little freedom. So
well, I think, you know, again, one of the, especially beginner filmmakers, they want to get the shot so right.
Yeah.
And there's nothing against that, obviously. You're supposed to want that.
Yeah.
But remember your actors. You know, I think there are some directors. I think it would be really great for directors to take acting classes.
Yeah.
To really kind of understand what that process is like, and understand that these actors are willing to do anything to help you realize your vision.
Right.
But you have to communicate in a way that's effective.
Yeah.
And you know, not be condescending. Not treat them like they're the furniture.
Yeah.
These are human beings that you have to treat with respect. And yeah. I don't think all directors do that.
Wow. And that's sad that they don't, you know? And even listening to their actors, because they've got a lot to say about the character. They're trying to get into this character. They could share a lot of information about that.
Yeah, absolutely.
So what's do you have any advice for a first-time director?
Prepare.
Oh,
be prepared.
Yeah.
And if you walk on a set and you're looking around going, well, what do you think we should do first? Or I don't know, Tom, where do you think the camera should go? You know, a crew will eat you alive.
Oh, yeah.
They don't want that shit.
Yeah. Crime is money, too, right?
Well, and also, you have to have the confidence. Yeah. You're the captain of the ship.
Yep.
And if the captain of the ship is going, wait a second, is that an iceberg? You know, that's bad. So be prepared. Have your shot list. You know, I don't do storyboards very often, occasionally, but I always have a shot list. And I know what shots we have to get. And then I've got sort of my special shots that I would like to get. But sometimes, look, you're not going to get them.
Yeah.
Because of time.
Yeah.
And just make sure you get your coverage. Wow. You know? Or if you're going to do like long continuous takes,
yeah,
you better have actors who can do that.
Yeah.
If you don't cut in for close-ups, you're going to have, you know, potentially major continuity problems.
Yeah.
You need to get your B-roll, you know, you got to really know what a scene's supposed to look like. And there's still going to be times where you get it into editing and you're like, ah, fuck, I never got that one shot.
Yeah.
But you make it work. But at least go in there as prepared as you can possibly
be. That's a great piece of advice.
Be able to answer any question that's thrown your way.
That's a great piece of advice for the newbie. So what's next for you, other than the next season of Thespian?
Right now, that is kind of the big thing. I'm working on the writing of that.
Yeah.
We're picking up shooting again in a couple of weeks.
Oh, good.
And it's always one of those things, you know, again, going back to what I said earlier, I can't write the whole season up front.
Right.
Because we have to remain flexible. I mean, there are times, you know, I'll give you another example. At the very first scene of the first episode, now like it's a flat. It starts off in the cemetery.
Yeah.
Well, that's actually a scene that was shot for the seventh episode.
Whoa!
And we decided we wanted to open the series with that snippet of that scene because I just think it's a nice way to launch.
Yeah.
And the woman who plays my sister Eileen, this actress Susan Linsky.
Yeah.
Originally, that role was supposed to be Adam's mother, and we couldn't find the right actress. And I just said to my wife, I said, you know what, maybe we should cast younger and maybe make it her sister. So we did that, and we ended up with an incredible,
incredibly
talented actress. So, you know, if I write a character, I try to keep him, you know, they don't have to be gender specific.
Right.
In some cases, I want just the best actor I can find.
Yeah.
So we have two episodes in the can for season two.
Yeah.
And there's a story arc that started. I mean, so this is kind of an interesting story. When I was writing a scene for season two where my character, there's an agent that my character ends up with who you'll meet in season one.
Right.
Well, he's also in season two. And there's a scene that I just thought it would be really funny if there was a scene that starts off with this agent telling Adam, this role is so you, pal. Like, if you can't book this, just quit the business. I mean, seriously, just, you know, buy a food truck. Organic kimchi chop tacos for everybody. And so I just thought that was a funny idea about this, like, shoving this script down his throat. So as I started to write the scene, I had Chuck's character, the agent, say, "Oh, you'll be playing a fence," and my character goes, "Oh, that's cool." So I'm like the stolen goods guy, and my brain just wrote the words, "No, a fence," and that made me laugh so hard that I had to keep it in. But then I had to justify it.
Yeah,
I had to figure out, what do you mean you're playing a fence?
Yeah.
So I came up with this entire subplot where Adam gets cast in a movie called Demon Mansion, and he plays the soul that basically different demons possess this different rooms of the house.
Right.
And his demon possesses the fence.
It's a fence.
So now, in 2 weeks, I have to shoot these scenes for this fictional movie called Demon Mansion that Adam gets cast in that all stems from me at my computer going, "No, a fence. So sometimes you have to follow where it takes you.
Absolutely.
And run, because I could have easily just deleted it.
Yeah.
And said, nah, you know what? That's silly. That doesn't work. But I said, screw that, and I found a way to make it work.
Wow, that's challenge, man. You're facing a challenge, and you accept it. I like that.
Yeah.
That's brilliant, man. So where can people see Thespian? You've mentioned a bit.
You know, for some reason, I don't really understand why, it's not available on Amazon Prime in Canada.
That wasn't one of the options. Yeah.
So I think if you searched on did you try searching on Amazon?
No, actually I didn't, because you just sent me the.
While we're taping, I'd be curious to know if you can actually find it through regular Amazon in Canada.
Let's see if I can go to Amazon
and just type in Thespian.
And I'm going to type in Thespian, and you know what? It does not show at all. Nope. No, it shows me all kinds of books, but it doesn't show me anything in the movies. How weird is that?
What? It's a different Amazon.
Yeah, it is. It is. Well, it's just rules. You know, there's rights. That's what it's all about, rights. So, right.
So the other option would be Vimeo.
Absolutely.
And just type in Thespian series.
Okay.
Or I can send you the link.
Yeah, that would be good if I can put that in the show notes, man.
Yeah, yeah. And we just dropped the price, I think. So now I think the whole season's like $10.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's, people, it's a bargain. Pick it up. Listen, did you mention your crowdfunding again, or are you finished?
We finished Indiegogo.
Right.
But we actually are still looking. We need about another 6,000 to really get where we want to go for season two. And if people are interested, and again, I can send you the link.
Please do.
There's a site called Fractured Atlas. I don't know. This wouldn't apply to Canadians, obviously. It wouldn't. I mean, I'm sure you could donate through it, but basically... Yeah. It's a not-for-profit,
right?
Which means we're operating under their umbrella.
Yeah.
So anybody in the States who donates through Fractured Atlas,
yeah,
their donation or their contribution is 100% tax deductible.
Oh, that's brilliant.
But I don't know that that would apply to. It probably doesn't apply to Canadians.
Yeah. Well, you know what? Send me the link, because I've got listeners all over the place.
Right. Sure. Of course.
Everywhere. Yes. Okay. Listen, we're down to the final three questions that I ask every guest that comes on the show.
Sure.
So what is the biggest filmmaking mistake you ever made, and how did you overcome it?
I would say trusting the wrong people.
You know what? You are not the first person to say that, my friend. I've at least four other people have said the same thing. Wow.
Yeah, well, I think what happens is when you're first starting out, and you don't really have a lot of you don't really know a lot of the of people. You don't know, a lot of crew. You kind of just grab the first guy who shows interest.
Yeah.
And you haven't necessarily vetted that person properly.
Right.
So I would say, I think I was a little too quick to shoot, just because I wanted to shoot, that I compromised and brought in people that I think in the back of my mind, I kind of knew might not be ideal.
Yeah.
So I would say that would be one. I guess that's really the big one.
Yeah.
But I guess there are times where I did early on where I may have actually forgotten a shot that was important.
Yeah. Shot list, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, I've pretty much always done shot lists.
Yeah.
I would say that is the big one. It's the trusting of putting myself in a position to rely on people that maybe I shouldn't have. I would say that's the big one.
Oh, man. So what's the best filmmaking advice you ever received?
Get good sound.
Yes.
I would say, honestly. Well, I also like what Sidney Lumet said. He didn't say it to me personally, but I'm pretty sure it's Lumet, and he's one of my favorite directors.
Yeah.
Shoot four walls.
Oh.
You know, unfortunately, on our budget, anytime you flip the line, right?
Yeah.
Everyone knows what flip the line means.
Yeah.
That means that you've got to take all your lights.
Yeah, put them to the other side.
So that takes time.
Yeah.
So sometimes you don't have the luxury of shooting four walls.
Yeah.
But you should try.
Yeah.
I think some people, they don't understand that where film is not theater, it's not a stage, right. is in the representation of a three-dimensional of a room.
Yeah.
So I feel like there are some scenes in Thespian where I look at them, I say I would have liked if we had flipped.
Right.
Because this looks a little too staged to me.
Yeah.
But I would say when you can, shoot the four walls.
Wow, that's interesting. So now I've kind of changed this question a little bit to because you've done TV and stage acting. And so I name a film or a show, TV or stage, that inspired you.
I would say Cassavetes inspired me a lot.
Yeah.
You know, I'm a child of the 70s. And I like that 70s kind of vibe. And I think in Thespian, it has this truth to it and this grittiness to it.
Yeah.
That yeah, some of it is we didn't have access to a Red. But a lot of that, though, is because that's what I like.
Yeah.
You know? And then I'm still inspired. I mean, there's a show now, I mentioned it earlier, Fleabag.
Yeah.
A really great show, and I find her work and that show inspiring. Anything that's good is inspiring.
That's well, true. You take the best of something, right? And you look at the positive,
right?
Oh, beautiful. So, listen, where can people find out about what you're up to right now?
ThespianSeries.com.
Oh, beautiful.
You can check us out on YouTube. We have a Facebook page.
Sure.
Obviously, we mentioned Vimeo and yep. Amazon if you're in the States.
What about you personally?
Pretty much everything I'm doing these days, at least right now, is either Thespian. Like, I don't have a website for myself.
Right, right.
Either it'll be on the Thespian Series site.
Right.
Or, you know, you can always friend me on Facebook.
Right.
And hear about my, you know, I did a feature film last year, this really funny role as a minister/lawyer, that I think I'm hoping comes out pretty soon.
So they can find you on thespianseries.com and everything is there.
Yeah.
Beautiful. Well, you know what? What can I say? This was awesome, man. Thank you so much for dropping by and talking to me. Because listen, Mark, this is a great series that people have to check out. I've only dipped my toe in the first two episodes, and now I have to go and, you know, jump in for the rest of it. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, a lot. You know, I'm really proud of the work that we've all done.
Oh, and you should be.
And I think it even gets better and better. And then season two. You know, now this season we're shooting on a C300, and with Zeiss lenses.
Whoa!
Yeah, because people found out about season one and wanted to help. So there's a rental house in Baltimore that's giving us a real sweetheart deal here, and it feels good. You know,
yeah.
It's also scary because I feel like no one knew us in the first season. Now they love us, and now I've got to make that happen again.
Ooh, expectations are high. Expectations.
Yeah, but we'll make it happen.
Oh, that is fantastic. Listen, Mark, thank you very much for being here. I really appreciate it.
Good talking to you.
That's our show for today, and I can't thank you enough for spending your valuable time with me. I greatly appreciate it. I really hope that you learned something from today's episode, and just as importantly, that you enjoyed it. As always, if you have any comments or questions about the show, please stop by my Facebook page at How They Did It Podcast. I'm on Twitter at HFilmmaking. And on Instagram at How They Did It Filmmaking. Please show your support for the show by subscribing on iTunes, Spotify, or Google Play. Thanks again for joining me, and I'll be back with another show next week. Until then, keep shooting.